This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Right Side Home Theater.
Hey, home theater nerds, welcome back to the Bright Side Home Theater Podcast. I'm DJ. This is week 12 of 2020. This is the podcast where we talk about what we did in our theaters this week. Got a few things to get to before we get to our main topic of the week, which is 1917. I saw in 4K in my theater. But aside from 1917, this week I also watched Iron Man in 4K. I think I saw that when it first came out on 4K. I think that was the last time I watched that movie. I happened to watch it this week for my other podcast, and I was really blown away by that. The sound was so in Atmos, and what's really cool is I've always thought Iron Man had a really, really good soundtrack anyways. Just the 5.1 on the original Blu-ray disc, I thought was a really strong soundtrack. Lot of good immersion, a lot of good sounds around the room, good placement, and some localized sounds. I've always enjoyed that soundtrack, but in 4K, I thought it really, really, maybe it's because I haven't seen it in a while, but I really enjoyed it. And one that sticks out in my mind, it's been quite a few days since I've seen it, but this really sticks out in my mind, is the scene when he first goes supersonic. I think he's going to Gamora for the first time, or if that's whatever the name of the city, maybe that's the character. But he's heading there, and when he goes supersonic and there's a boom, my son and I turned and looked at each other, and we were like, that, it was such a good, bassy, deep boom. And I don't remember hearing it that way ever in the past. But again, could be just, you know, recency bias of this week, but it was very impressive. I really enjoyed that. I'm enjoying Altered Carbon. Just started that one up a couple weeks ago. I might have mentioned earlier, but the sound on that is really good. Picture on that is really good as well. Netflix always does a great job. Really enjoying that. But the other note this week, I bought Bloodshot the day it came out on digital. I'm in the middle of trying to figure out a little bit of an experiment here, because I put out on Tuesday morning when I bought it that it's not in Atmos, which I found interesting. But as I put in my tweet, I said, well, no big deal. It'll be something to look forward to on disc. But then as the day went on and people were releasing their takes on it, and it was in Atmos. Well, come to find out, I think on Vudu, you can get it on Atmos. I bought it for $19.99 on iTunes, and that just gives you a standard 5.1. It's in 4K. It looked great. I thought it sounded great in 5.1. I really enjoyed it. Obviously, my system's upmixing it anyways, but it's not Atmos. It's 5.1. Sounded really good. Decent bass. My son and I are watching it. I'm thinking, wow, imagine what this is going to sound like on disc, because you know when it's not streaming and it's on disc, it's going to be cleaner. It's going to be stronger. It's a better disc. It's a better cut, I should say. But now I'm really intrigued that you can get it on Vudu and Atmos and not on iTunes. And on Tuesday night, I actually tried to buy it again on Vudu. But if you get Vudu on your Apple TV, you can't buy the movies, because, of course, Apple wants you to get them through iTunes. So now I'm wondering what platform do I need to have so I can get Vudu and be able to compare it? And I'm willing to do it, and I know I can do the research. I'll do the research. If you hear this and you want to tweet me and I don't know already, tweet at me where you can get it. That'd be great. But I'm sure when I get a moment to sit down and actually, you know, think about this and do it, I'll figure it out. And I don't know if it's on, you can't do it on Amazon. I already checked that, because I have a Fire Stick in the house, but maybe on a Roku or whatever. But that would be a fun experiment for me. Yeah. And okay, $20. It's my hobby. I've spent money on worse things to buy the movie yet again. But I'd love to hear the difference in the, get that in Atmos, and maybe see what it looks like on another platform. I really think Apple TV is probably one of the best at picture and sound and everything for what they do with the up converting or flat out just putting it through the way it should be. You can go and listen to AV Rant. They'll tell you all the time, Apple TV is probably the better one. One of the best one. Streaming players, that is. But the other thing about Bloodshot was this was the first opportunity I've ever had to see a movie in a theater and that quickly be able to see it in my theater. Because usually there's a 3-month gap between, you know, the theatrical release and then the digital and then the subsequent, you know, Blu-ray 4K release. This was a week. I saw it twice in the theater. And it's funny. So I saw it in 3 different formats already. I saw it in a really kind of like mediocre theater. Then I saw it in the Showcase Cinema X Plus theater with the Atmos surround and the bigger screen and better picture. And then I saw it in my theater. And they were all roughly the same distance apart. So I saw it Thursday, Tuesday, and a week later. So a little bit further away from Tuesday to Tuesday on the last theatrical version to my theater. And I've always known this to be true. But now, seeing this that quickly back to back, our theaters are better. Because it's a more intimate environment. It's... If you have a decent Atmos system and you have a big screen, it's a much better experience than going to the theater because for sound and picture, I mean, because the sounds are localized right to you. Whereas when you're sitting in the theater, the sounds are for everybody that's in there. So it's not as discreet. It's not as enveloping. It's a different, I'm not saying I don't ever want to go to a theater again. I love that experience of going to the theater, but for the true surround sound and the picture and the immersion into the story and into the action, sitting in your theater is better to me than going to the theater. And I've been to the Dolby Cinema theaters and they are really good. They have great bass and you go to those so that you can, if you don't have that at home, you know what you're trying to attain. Well, once you get to that, it's better. It just is because I think you just have better separation. You have, you know, better localization. It's just a better experience. And this was the first time where it was that close and it was a lot of fun. I was just really blown away by the movie. I want to watch it again because I don't want to forget what it was like in the theater and I want to do it again. But I'm busy and I've got other things to move on to, like I had to move on to 1917. But before we even get to 1917, I got a couple of listener comments this week. So the first one comes from John via email. He emailed saying, I have a living room 5.1.4 setup with LG TV. I don't want to give up on 3D yet anyways. I have lots of 4K discs and streaming services. I find catalog titles have, in general, much more aggressive immersive soundtracks. I would put Cliffhanger 4K up against any other immersive mix. The entire movie is stacked with overhead effects. Upmixing, I find 7.1 movies upmix generally better. But something 5.1 that's spectacular is Twister. Lots of rage in the speakers overhead. A really cool surprising upmix is Star Trek 1979. Absolutely psychedelic when going into warp drive and lots of overhead effects when attacking Enterprise and in final scenes. New movies in general just have good ear level tracks. In general, most not much going on upstairs, i.e. Fate of the Furious and Hobbs and Shaw to name a few. Cliffhanger blows any Star Wars or Marvel soundtrack out of the water. Some nice work has also been done to Braveheart and Gladiator. Catalog titles just seem way more aggressive. I just heard about your show. It was mentioned on either AV Rant or HT Guys. Listen to both weekly. Thanks, John. Well, thanks for emailing in, John. And I guarantee you it was AV Rant because I haven't introduced myself yet to the HT Guys. And I love that show as well. But AV Rant, we've talked back and forth a bunch of times. They've mentioned me on their show. And I mentioned them as well. But great stuff in here. Braveheart and Gladiator, Those were some of my favorite movies on Laserdisc. There's a scene, and I'm dying to see it on 4K, just haven't had the opportunity to, one, run out and purchase them, and two, obviously watch them. But there's a scene in Braveheart where you're walking and the bodies are hanging, if you know the scene I'm talking about, and you can hear, and this was on my system, in my living, similar to yours, it was in my living room, it was a 5.1 system, and, oh, actually, let me rephrase that. It was a 5 system. I hadn't even had the opportunity to get a subwoofer yet. This was back in the 90s. So I had a, you know, 5-channel system, and you could hear. I remember playing the scene for people when they came in the house. I'd be like, oh, check this out, because home theater back then was really a novelty. So you'd play that scene, and it is a gross scene. There's dead bodies hanging, but you could hear the ropes twisting all around the room. So I'm really interested to hear that now. I haven't watched that movie in years. Probably I've watched it on DVD here in this theater, but, and I'm sure I watched it on Laserdisc in this theater too. Cause when I built the theater in 01, I was still running Laserdisc at the time. But yeah, I agree. The upmixing 7.1, most people would never hear the difference between a good upmixed track and Atmos. I'm sure most of the people listening to me right now, we all know the difference. This is our hobby. We'll hear the difference. But like today's movie, 1917, that's in Atmos. I would put Dunkirk up against it, and Dunkirk's in 5.1. And it really is about the quality of the sound engineering and the sound mixing than it is more about whether you're getting Atmos or 7 or 5.1. I would tend to agree that the 7.1s are going to be better than the 5.1s, because if you're thinking, when you're making a movie, you're going to, if you're actually going the step to put 7.1, it's because you care and you just want that extra oomph. So you're actually going to be doing a little bit more discrete sounds here and there. But that being said, Dunkirk is an amazing soundtrack, and that's only in 5.1. And I love that Christopher Nolan did that, because part of me wants to say, like, he does that just so that he could show you what can be done. Don't believe the hype of what, because just because it's Atmos doesn't mean it's great. And I think he's one of those people that likes to prove people wrong. I've never spoken to him, but, you know, it's that kind of bold move strikes me like that. But thanks for the email, John. That was great. And the next one is a tweet from Adriano the Nerd, at Adriano Tweets 87. He tweeted, at Brightside HT, with the recent specs reveal of the Xbox Series X and the lack of an optical outport, is Xbox making a big mistake here? What's your take? Is home theater tech in general moving away from this port or sound? I haven't bought a new sound system in years, so I have no idea what surround systems tech has moved towards. My One X is currently my primary media player, and while this isn't a deal breaker by any means, it is a bit of a disappointment, I suppose, to drop this port from my perspective. I replied, quick answer, yes, in my opinion, the HD industry is moving away from the op-out port and going strictly to HDMI. I will elaborate on this more in this week's podcast. So here we go. Yeah, I would, in this strictly my opinion, there are many, many experts out there you can tell you exactly what these ports do and the differences in them, but I think the industry itself is moving towards HDMI only. It's the simplistic route. I wouldn't consider myself a layman, but I don't know technical specs like a lot of people. I'm more about, like, I love the environment, I love the hobby, but over the years, when you see the difference as they progress, and we started with, you know, a coax to composite component, optical. Oh, yeah, that's the other. The S-Video, that was my favorite one, because I was always so proud of that one. I was like, oh, I'm running on S-Video. And most people didn't know what that was at the time, and that was back in the late 80s, early 90s or whatever. But HDMI is so simple. It does everything very, very well, and they've just been upgrading as the bandwidths have increased. They just upgrade the cable itself. But the general public, the 95, 98% of the population, that all they want to know is plugging in a cord, it makes everything so simple. And as somebody is like, I've been in this hobby since the 80s, since I was a kid, and I would go to somebody's house because their cable box wasn't working or their VCR wasn't working. And you'd think you'd look on the back of the VCR and it said in and out, and you'd have your yellow, white, and your red. It'd be easy to do, but people would mix that up. People would look at the yellow out and they'd go, okay, well, this is going out, so I'll put it in here. No, they mixed that up, and you'd go to their house, they'd have a blank screen, and you just swap the cables and they were fine. But an HDMI, unless you get a fiber optic HDMI that's powered, they're unidirectional or whatever you call that. It's anybody can just use an HDMI. It's a lot simpler. And on an Xbox, you just plug it in. I think they're just trying to simplify the market, and it has the same quality for all the levels. If you have a great system, you're going to get the best quality out of an HDMI. If you're just trying to plug this in and play and you don't care about quality or anything like that, it's still the easiest way to do it. Great question, though. Anybody else has questions, comments, anything, ideas for the show, anything like that, let me know on Twitter at BrightsideHT, or you can email me at BrightsideHomeTheater@gmail.com. That's fun. I like taking the questions and comments. It's fun to have a little interaction. Appreciate it. All right, I think that's about it. So let's get into 1917. So I didn't see this in the theater. I don't remember why, because I think I would have liked to have seen this in the theater. Maybe I was busy and then the time had not run out, but then you're like, all right, we're getting close enough to watching it at home, and I'll just wait for it there. I was able to get a copy on the day it was released on Tuesday. I waited outside my Best Buy and I waited for them to bring it to my truck because we are in a, you know, quote, lockdown here. Luckily, Best Buy is considered an essential business because they sell refrigerators and actually internet hardware and stuff. So if your internet breaks down, you need to get that. And essentials like 1917 in 4K. So I popped this in, and the menu, so I'll go spoiler free as usual for a little while. And when you hear the popcorn popping, you know we're going into the spoilers. So spoiler free, yeah, the menu on this thing was awesome. I've never seen a movie like this before where they actually had all the extras to the right hand side of the screen. Really, really impressive. And if you're watching the movie and you hit menu, it actually takes the movie, keeps playing it, slides it off a little bit to the left, smaller screen, so you retain the aspect ratio, which is the 239:1, I believe. So you retain aspect ratio, but it's a small screen. You get a little menu bar at the bottom, and then you get all your little extras on the right-hand side. That was really cool. I thought, I'm like, why aren't all movies doing this? And if you know of movies that are doing this that I don't know of, let me know. I might buy them just because of that. I thought that was pretty impressive. So like most people starting this movie, I've heard that it's a great movie. It's a great cinema movie. This is a movie. Didn't know what to expect. I knew it was a war movie. I got the idea that it was, I've heard the stories that it's similar to Saving Private Ryan, like the kind of like a couple of guys go on a mission type thing. Okay, I get it. Like in Saving Private Ryan, we had to get a message someplace. The first thing I noticed about this movie when it starts up is the long shot. These are very long, drawn-out shots, and it is unreal. And, I mean, that stuff's on the internet, too, so that's not really a spoiler. But I'm telling you, it's this movie, if you're a film fan, this is definitely a movie to see. But the picture, the motion, the colors, everything is so subdued. I'll get into that in spoilers. There's a couple of scenes where they're not. But the picture looks so good in 4K. The blacks, the brights, but there aren't many. The variants, it's hard to explain, but it's the uniforms, everything is so crystal clear. Seeing the threads on some of their patches on their uniforms, I was noticing some dangling threads or something. It was very, very immersive picture-wise. But the sound? Whew. So I had mentioned Dunkirk earlier. I didn't know how to frame this, how to say this, but I feel like saying, like, this is what Dunkirk could have been like if it was in Atmos. And I know I just said you don't need Atmos to, but I only say that to say, like, this is a reference sound movie. This is a must own movie if you love home theater sound. It has everything. It has bass, it has directional, it has environment, it has everything you want out of your sound you get in this movie. It's referenced practically from beginning to end, and not in a comic book gimmicky way. This is a real life movie that it's a fictional story, but it's a real life thing. This is a piece of art. And they use the sound as a piece of art. They use the picture as a piece of sound. They use the picture as a piece of art. The way they filmed this was a piece of art. Another movie, I said when I talked Dredd, they developed cameras for Dredd. They developed cameras for this movie. They developed styles of shooting for this movie. This is a piece of art that also is like, it just really shows off a theater. Most of the time you're talking about showing off your theater, you're talking like Transformers, and you get the recommendation. Now, I like Transformers, but you get people say, look, if you can suffer through the story, it's an unbelievable theater experience. This isn't. This has got everything. This movie has everything. It checks all the boxes. Highly recommend the movie. Highly recommend the theater experience. I can't emphasize enough how much the picture quality is also enhanced by the way the movie is shot. The picture quality is great, but I think it's really shown off by the way they shot the movie as well. All of that being said, if you have the time, which a lot of people have some time on their hands right now, when you get to the extras, just hit play. I don't even know how long they all are. I don't even know the names of the different ones. I was so engrossed after watching this movie, I just hit play on all the extras, and I went right through all of them, not including the audio commentary. I rewatched those after. But the extras, just watch them. Because it's going to explain the rest of the movie, like how they made the movie. After you're done watching the movie, watch all of the extras. And maybe it's an extra hour of your time, but I guarantee you, you're going to wish it was longer when you're done watching the extras. Because, and I'll get into some of it in a little bit in spoilers. I don't want to tell too much because then I'll give away parts of the movie. But all of the extras are very informative. And I mean, they teach you how to make movies. They teach you about the sound. They teach you. There's a lot of information in there. The commentaries, same thing. You got time on your hands, put the commentaries on. You don't have to watch them in 4K. Actually, what's nice is the extras are on both the 4K and the Blu-ray. But the audio commentary by Sam Mendes goes really in depth on everything, really. It goes in depth on the characters and what the characters were thinking at the time, where maybe you don't get that in the movie. But he starts to, you know, explain more about the character development. He tells you about his background with his grandfather, which was the inspiration for this entire story. At one point, we were watching one of the extras, and they showed this long shot of, like, just the scope of how this entire movie was made and how many people are involved. And, I mean, I'm telling you, it's a long shot. If you're looking at a huge, huge, like, amount of people. And I grew up, my father was in Vietnam, and he told me stories growing up, and I leaned over to my son. I go, imagine if Papa told, you know, he told me stories and I made something out of it. Look at what this guy did. And you see the scope of people. Like, he had an idea from what his father one man telling his grandson some stories. And this is what Sam Mendes did with it. It's amazing. And it's an amazing tribute to Samuel Mendes, but also to his grandfather. And it's you watching the extras, you really get blown away with that. And then listening to his audio commentary and the depth that they thought of. And like I said, I'll get into a few of those in spoilers too. There's one really good one that I was really excited about. But yeah, this movie is, all right. It's great. Let's just say that. And, the popcorn's popping. So let's get to some spoilers. So the first spoiler I'm going to talk about is I was going to save it for the end because you know what? I am going to save it for the end and I'll explain why when we get there. So the first spoiler I will talk about then is at 35 minutes and 40 seconds. So at this point of the movie, you've been through the trenches. You've been through no man's land. It is dank. It is dreary. It is everything. Like it's overcast. It's And you hear about that in the extras where they actually, because everything was filmed using like practical lighting and stuff. So if it was a very sunny day, they couldn't shoot. They had to wait for clouds to roll in so they could shoot again, which is weird, but that's how they did it. There are some special effects in this that you'll get in, you know, where they had to redo the backgrounds and everything. And that they did a great job with that. And that was a tricky thing to do because of the scope of the shots, and they explain that in the extras and in the commentary as well. But this scene comes at 35 minutes and 40 seconds, and it's when they reach the green grass. And you've been, at this point of the movie, you've been through so much, and it's been so grim, and the colors have been so, like, muted just because of the lighting and the gray skies, and that's the environment. It's like you're going through the trenches and everything is just bleak. And it's like the muted yellows on their uniforms and the browns and everything is just blah. And they come to this clearing and all of a sudden you see green grass. And I'm from Massachusetts. I grew up in Massachusetts. And I'm not kidding. I wrote it down, and I didn't do a lot of writing when I was watching this movie because I was so engrossed in the movie. I was thinking it was the first time I went to Fenway Park with my dad, and you see that green grass because we have green grass at home. I didn't grow up in the city, but you drive from your home to the city and you go into the city and it's all steel and concrete. And then you step out and you see the green grass of the major league field in the middle of a city. And that grass, for some reason, just really pops. That's how I felt seeing this. It really just that green grass and then I started to look at it more and I'm like, well, it's not as bright as Fenway was, but it felt that way because you were just so, it was just so dreary before that. And they step out onto this field and I just thought that was like, what a tribute to the 4K, whatever, or the way they shot it, the cinematography. I was like, oh wow, that looks so nice. It was pretty cool. So the next scene comes at 1 hour, 3 minutes, and 50 seconds. If you've seen this movie, it's the gunfire at the bridge that's out when the character Schofield has to cross that bridge that's out. And the sniper fire starts to come. And it's almost a jump out of your seat type punctuation. It's so discreet. It's so loud. The bass, it sounds like a real gunfire. I've been around guns a little bit. I've heard gunfire, not at me. I've shot guns, but this, it was just so distinct. And my son sitting to my left, that happened to be where the sound came from, that side of the room. And he let out an audible, ow, that hurt. Like it hurt his ear. He was a little closer than I was. My room's not huge, so that speaker is a little closer to him. But the gunfire in that scene, so sharp, so good, and discreet around the room. I say when I first said like it's so discreet, it was like you could really tell it was gunfire. It's just a sharp is probably a better way to put it. But as far as discreet, you could tell what side of the room it was on, and the bass to those shots was pulsing in your chest. It was really, really good. The next scene is about the score. It comes at 1 hour, 22 minutes, and 16 seconds. And the score is a big deal in this movie anyway. Throughout the movie, the score really sets, is really the biggest part of the surround sound. Like, there's some great gunfire. there's some explosions, but the majority, when I say this is like a reference disc from beginning to end, that's about the score. And this one scene I made note of because you actually, it felt like the drums in this, in the score were actually overhead, like at the top half of the screen, like, and it was like a boom, boom, boom across the front of your room, the different drum beats, and they went across the top of your screen. It was like floating in front of you. It was really weird and really cool. Like I had never experienced that where it felt like the drum sound was going across my screen at the top of the room. I wonder if anybody else experienced that. Maybe it's me, but I really, really enjoyed that. And I made note of that. And speaking of that, I didn't make a lot of notes in this, and that's, I said that a few minutes ago, because the way this movie was shot, you don't want to take your eyes off the screen because they don't take their eyes off of anything. So when this movie started up, I said to my son, we were like 5 minutes into it, I go, we're still in the opening shot. And he's like, what? I go, we haven't had a break. There hasn't been a break, a blend, or anything. And I kept trying to find it. They're in, that's the way they shot the movie. It's just one long shot. And if you listen to the commentary, Sam Mendes goes through and he says, I'm going to tell you a handful of these, but I don't want to tell you all of them. And he does. He goes through and he's like, there's one there. And a couple of them I knew, you can kind of tell. And when I say kind of, they're really well done. But most people would never know. But then there was one in the early part of the movie that I didn't know was there. And it's a scene when they're in the trench. It's still, you know, a long shot at the beginning, but they use another character. They go in front of them. The camera goes behind that character and they break to the other side. And that one was really, really well done. There's a few others that you would never know. There's one at the orchard that they step through the stone wall that's been, you know, half shot down, and they step from one side of the stone wall to the other, and that's a scene break. And you would never know if he didn't tell you, because that's one of the ones that they had to get the weather right when they stepped to the other side. And when you see the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. But if you haven't listened to the commentary, throw the commentary on and put that scene in at the apple orchard. And I think it's apples or cherry, whatever. Maybe it's cherry trees, but you'll know when they get to that farmhouse, and it's right before Blake dies. I didn't write it down, but it's right before Blake dies. It's that scene there when they're walking through the orchard. But put the commentary on and he'll tell you all about like what it took to get from, you know, one side of that wall to the other. It's pretty cool. But the last thing I would talk about as far before we get to some extras, and well, I should say second to last thing, because I've saved the best for last, and I'll explain that in a minute. But the last thing I would say is, so this movie started at a tree and ended at a tree, and you probably don't notice it at the beginning, but they're just relaxing under a tree, but you don't have that, the weight of the movie on you at the time, so it's not as, it does, nothing registers. You're just watching, you're like, okay, they're at a tree. At the end of the movie, when Schofield goes and sits down at the tree, and that warm sunlight hits him, and you can see how you feel that warm sunlight hitting you. It was, I thought, after the weight of this entire movie and how bleak everything is, that you could almost feel the warmth coming off of your screen. It was, which is a testament to how they shot this movie, how they lit this movie, the costumes, everything about it. It just, in your theater, you're going to feel that. It just felt so, it's in that one little thing. It's like, if you could feel that off the screen, then yeah, you probably were fully immersed in this movie while you were watching it. So I said earlier, I'm saving this last one. It was the first scene in the movie that made me go, wow. And I haven't gone wow like this in a long, long time. And this is a movie, if you want to scare the pants off of somebody, if you want to show off your system, this is an absolute reference scene. At 28 minutes and 10 seconds, it's when the rat trips the wire and the explosion goes off in the German tunnel. The tunnel blows up, and the explosion is one thing. It's the aftermath of the explosion and hearing that tunnel collapsing around them. and all of the noises around your room. And if you have a dedicated theater and you're in a blacked out room and this is going on, it sounds like your room is crumbling around you. I am not claustrophobic, but if I was to guess at what somebody that is claustrophobic feels like, that's what it would be. I would guess. While that scene was going on, the first thing that popped in my mind was the scene from Kill Bill when she was stuck, buried alive in the darkness. And that was scary because your whole room, if you're in a dedicated room in that scene, your whole room is black. You can't see your hand in front of your face. But you hear the noises, and that's one of those things where if you take all the visuals away and it's just black, your hearing is heightened. Well, this scene, there are visuals, but the sounds are even more than that. Kill. You hear the stones falling. You hear the roof crumbling in on you. And in the Atmos, they're using those speakers. And this is an unreal scene to, you know, really show off your system. If somebody comes over and you just put this scene on, go to 2810 on 1917, and that would have been cool if they put that at 1917 of night, because it is that good of a scene. But I digress there. That was funny. But like I said, this whole movie from beginning to end is a reference disc for sound and picture. I have a few things of extras that really, really blew me away. But first and foremost, it's like, I gotta say, if I haven't said it already, I forget, but listening to the audio, both audio commentaries, it's basically an education of like how to write a movie, how to shoot a movie, what it took for this movie. It's like the scope of the work that was involved to develop some of these scenes, like, because they did these long shots of long duration. I mean, of like, it's 6 minutes at a time of movie time, and it's so entertaining to listen to these commentaries and to understand what they went through. But two things that jumped out at me. First off is when Blake dies. When you see it for the first time, if you haven't watched the audio commentary or listened to any of the extras, you see that his face goes pale. But in this, it's all one shot, so nobody's coming in and putting makeup on him. So I was thinking they did that in post, after the fact, digitally. And I'm watching this, and first off, they tell you, you know, Sam Mendes, it was the one that was like, so this shot was designed, he goes to the water fountain, and you're supposed to be thinking, and I was, he's like, oh, he starts pumping the water's a little dirty, but you're meant as a viewer to be thinking, are we going to get clean water out of this, or is this water going to run clear so you get better water? And next thing you know, you've got worse things to worry about because Blake got stabbed. But when he rushes over to Blake, he has color on his face, and his face starts to lose color. And Sam Mendes says this is some of the finest acting he's seen in this movie, because that color going out of his face is acting. Somehow he did that himself. And Sam Mendes speculated that it was that. So there's a pump in his pack to make the blood come out in his backpack, so, you know, mechanical, so it'll splurt the blood, but he could feel the pulsing of the blood splurting out, so it made him feel like he really was stabbed. So maybe, I don't know, but put the commentary on, put Sam Mendes's commentary on for that scene, and you're gonna be that entire scene, he loses color all on his own. He did say that they colored his face after he had died. They had an opportunity, but it was after the death scene. And he explains where that is, where they actually got to actually color his face a little bit more. But that's a pretty cool scene, because if you don't know any of that, you'd think that they did it, because he clearly loses color in his face. So the last one came in the extras, and I believe maybe it was Sam Mendes, but I believe it was the like set designer, and they were bringing in the trees for all of the, for that, like the cherry trees to set that scene. So they built that entire, like they built the farmhouse, they built the barn, they brought the trees in, planted the trees and all of that. And there was this one particular tree that was split. They bought the tree, whatever, and it split down the middle. and they had planted it, and they're like, oh, that's not a good tree. So they were going to get it out of there. And Sam Mendez said, no, that's perfect. We're going to use that. Leave it right where it is. Put the tree right there. And it's in the back shot, background of when Blake dies. And he's like, that's symbolic. The tree splitting. This is the part of the movie where these two characters split off. So that tree in the background will be symbolic of this. And I'm listening to this and I'm like, oh my God, this is that's what I was raised. Everything has meaning. Like when you're writing a movie, you're writing a book, you're writing something, anything you do, it has a meaning. And it's like, there's a blurry tree in the background that's split. And the writer of this movie is like, no, we're going to leave that. Most people thought it was a mistake. We need to get a better tree. And he's like, no, that works. I'm going to make that work. And I thought that was just an incredible piece of like directing, writing, whatever you want to call it. But it was just, I thought that was so cool. And it's like, whenever you look at something in a movie, it's like there's a reason that's there. And that he basically spells it out in this extra. And I was just really impressed by that. And it was really cool. And now when you see that scene, I'm like, yeah, that tree. I didn't even notice it the first time I watched it. It's not even a subliminal message. You don't look and go, hey, that tree's kind of ugly in the background. It's split. And it's not ugly. It's just you barely even notice it's split. But they made a point of it. And I thought it was really, really cool. And just one of those things that's been reinforced to me over the years that everything has meaning and, you know, just really, really cool. So that's it for this week. Thanks for listening and thanks for the comments. We're starting to run a little longer than I usually expected, but that's great because we're getting comments and that's fun part of the show. So if you'd like to, any questions, comments, again, you can hit me up on Twitter at BrightsideHT. Or you can email me at brightsidehometheater@gmail.com. And if you're on iTunes, you can please actually rate, review, and subscribe. Actually, you could do that on any of the platforms from what I understand. So that would be great. I'd really appreciate it. But yeah, keep the comments coming. And next week we have Star Wars. The box set comes out that I ordered back in November. I've already talked to my Best Buy. I should be able to pick it up on Tuesday. So I'll probably be doing that. I shouldn't say probably. I'm going to be doing that. I may do that the next 2 weeks. I don't know. I'm just really excited for that. The sound on that, I've been waiting 40 years. Because I'm always looking for the next best version. So everybody have a great week. Stay safe. And go push play. Thanks for listening.
Hey Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.